live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York. This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, the Upper Delaware Council is facing funding challenges and local leaders are searching for solutions. Reporter Carla Guzman from The River Reporter joins us to explain what's at stake and what could happen next. Comedian Matt Ruby is bringing his dark, sharp, and hilarious stand-up to The Parlor in Narrowsburg this weekend. We'll talk to him for a laugh. And Eli Lev, the singer-songwriter, has traveled the world sharing heartfelt songs that blend folk, Americana, and soul, and he'll be in Ellenville, and we'll chat with him. Plus, it's our fall fun drive. We're looking for your support to help us reach our goal faster than ever, if possible. 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. The news is next.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Israeli authorities have identified the bodies of four deceased hostages who were handed over by Hamas. The bodies of 24 more hostages remain in Gaza. Separately, more humanitarian aid is starting to flow into Gaza. Emmett Maspero is with the UN Children's Agency, UNICEF. She says they're rushing food packages and winter clothes to Gaza.
We see so many children severely, acutely malnourished. And those are just some of the ways that UNICEF is trying to move supplies in to deal with what is an overwhelmingly massive need on the ground.
What is not yet clear is who will govern Gaza after the war. President Trump's plan calls for a multinational board of peace, but the extent of the board's role is not yet known. The federal government has now been shut down for 2 weeks. President Trump has ordered the Defense Department to pay members of the U.S. military. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent told Fox Business News that to do this, the Trump administration is holding back payments to other federal workers and federal services. Republican lawmakers in North Carolina say they're going to redraw the state's congressional map. They're following similar actions by other states. From the North Carolina newsroom, Adam Wagner has more.
Republicans want to redraw the map to secure one more U.S. House seat for their party. State Speaker of the House Destin Hall and Senate Leader Phil Berger both say they are acting in response to California's upcoming referendum on new districts. Where California's plan would net 5 seats for Democrats, Texas's is intended to add 5 Republican seats. A new Missouri map also aims to add a GOP seat. Republicans safely hold 10 of North Carolina's 14 House districts, while Democrats hold 3. Democrat Don Davis sits in the state's lone swing district. North Carolina lawmakers are expected to consider the new map next week. For NPR News, I'm Adam Wagner in Raleigh.
Stocks opened lower this morning despite solid earnings reports from some of the nation's biggest banks. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average tumbled about 360 points in early trading.
A flurry of investment banking deals helped pad the profits of banks like J.P. Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, Wells Fargo, and Citigroup. J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon says the U.S. economy remained resilient during the most recent quarter, though he cautioned trade wars and big government deficits continue to make for a risky outlook. President Trump is meeting this afternoon with Argentine President Javier Milei, a key ally. The U.S. has been working to prop up Argentina's sagging currency ahead of that country's midterm elections later this month. And General Motors plans to take a $1.6 billion charge against earnings in its next quarter as it adjusts to new federal policies that are less friendly to electric vehicles. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Nasdaq is down 350 points, or 1.5%. This is NPR. President Trump's new tariffs have gone into effect on lumber and imported furniture and kitchen cabinets. These tariffs range from 20 to 50%. This comes as Trump spars with China on trade. He's threatening to impose a 100% tariff on imported Chinese goods. China has also introduced new restrictions on rare earth minerals that are exported. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says he'll be in Washington on Friday. He says he'll ask for help with air defenses and long-range weapons to strike back at Russia. NPR's Joanna Kakissis reports from Kyiv.
Zelensky has spoken to Trump on the phone in the past week and said he is hoping to meet him at the White House during his upcoming visit to the U.S.
And of course, I have some more meetings, which are also important for me, some military companies. The main topic is air defense and our possibilities with long-range to pressure on Russia.
Long range is a reference to weapons like the U.S.-made Tomahawk missile, which can travel 1,500 miles and put Moscow in range of the Ukrainian military. Trump said he is considering sending Tomahawks to Ukraine. Russia says doing so would escalate the war. Joanna Kakissis, NPR News, Kyiv.
The U.S. Supreme Court has rejected an appeal from conspiracy theorist Alex Jones. He wanted the justices to block a $1.4 billion defamation judgment against him. Jones was successfully sued by Sandy Hook families after he spread lies that the Sandy Hook school shooting was a hoax. You're listening to NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, supporting creative people and effective institutions committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information is at macfound.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. We'll speak with Carla Guzman from The River Reporter in just a moment. But first, we want to remind you it's our fall fun drive. And here to help remind me, Ronald Kelson. Ronald, you've been here since this morning. We've been through
allegedly.
It all. We've been through it all. Or a little bit of it.
We've been through war.
We've seen the first day of the fun drive, which is always kind of a tough one to kind of get going.
Yeah.
But I will tell you that it has been going. We have been watching that Wheel of Progress move. When we first started it this morning, we were at 18%. We're now at 21% of our goal, $11,449 raised. Thank you so much to everybody who's donated so far. Mimi opened the mail, so that helped us move it a little further. We got a few phone calls and some folks online. So you can help us out with your donation at 845-482-4141 or go to wjffradio.org.
Yeah, you please help us support Radio Catskill, keep public radio alive and well in Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania. Congress has told us to go fund ourselves, and we're going to take them up on that challenge. We believe in you. We know you can help us fund ourselves. And again, we're relying on you. Go to wjffradio.org or give us a call, 845-482-4141.
Your support is more important than ever. During every fund drive up until this point, we have told you that listener support is the majority of our funding. Well, it's now all of our funding. All of that government support, 25% of our budget, gone. And thanks to folks who rallied since the summer when we lost that, we're going to be okay for the rest of 2025's lost funding, right? But we already had these other goals in place. The fall fund drive we need to meet, the year-end appeal we need to meet, the music sale, all of those things, when you contribute, help us stay independent and strong. And so, again, thank you to everyone who threw us that lifeline for the rest of 2025. But the challenge continues. The funding gap returns every year. This was something that all the public media stations and television stations throughout the country relied on. It was part of the whole system for decades. It's gone. The CPB is closed. So we need your help. Plus, there's a threat to independent media. The FCC licensing under scrutiny for some places, a nonprofit status question, pressure on censorship. We're on the front lines here as an independent media station here to bring you fact-based journalism, fact-based information, and interviews, so you'll know what's going on and you can rely on that information, and your gift helps fortify us at 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. Again, if you think that they're trying to turn down the volume a little bit on some folks out there, it seems to be that that's what's happening, but you, with your support, will help keep us strong and stay here for 35 plus more years. 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. Show your support right now. Let's transition over to talking to our first guest. It's Carla Guzman from The River Reporter joining us live with a story about the Upper Delaware Council, the organization that helps protect and manage the federally designated Upper Delaware Scenic and Recreational River. They're facing some serious financial challenges, and Carla has been reporting on that. Carla, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks, Tim, for having me.
So I kind of outlined it a little bit about what the UDC or Upper Delaware Council does, but for maybe folks who aren't familiar with them, explain a little bit more about what they do and why it matters for folks, not only living along the river, but for the entire Upper Delaware River region.
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to chat about that. So yeah, the UDC, they mediate the local, state, and federal government bodies. So together they can govern the upper Delaware River Valley.
Yeah. And so what are some of these challenges? Your recent reporting highlights some of the funding challenges they have. And what's going on and how did that situation come about?
Yeah, sure. So the UDC, in response to the financial crisis they're experiencing, they've developed a task force to address some of these concerns. So this goes back to, you know, when they were actually like forming back in the day, they were allocated $500K in funding. Federal funding has stayed at $300K since, and it hasn't been adjusted for inflation. Plus, they have not received the 40% operating aid contributions from New York State and Pennsylvania.
So this is something that's kind of been an ongoing issue for them.
Right.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. So you mentioned that this task force has been formed. What are some of the recommendations that they have presented to help fix some of those issues for funding and maybe some of the biggest takeaways from the presentation
sure.
that they had?
Yeah. So I've been attending their meetings, including the presentation that they had for the general public. So they recommended hiring a fundraising consultant, refining their communications plan to really, you know, put forward that UDC brand identity, as well as identifying some gaps in outreach and refining their case statements so the general public, you know, should know why they should care about, you know, the upper Delaware River, as well as a fundraising plan with some concrete deliverables. It's just one of the main things that the people in the task force were trying to say, that there are people who cares, but if we're going to go into some, you know, private funding, you got to find those people.
And you've been covering this, as you said. Have there been any responses to these proposals yet, or anything that seems promising?
In honor of the Congressman McHugh, the UDC had in order to still have this honor, they basically, you know, have a plaque now in Narrowsburg at Main Street that people can visit now. But they were trying to really emphasize like the fundraising involved for this specific project. So they tapped into like community members in order to offset costs.
So mm-hmm. you're talking about this, the Congressman McHugh. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about him, Representative Matthew McHugh. His legislation in 1978 secured the federal protection for the Upper Delaware River. So they had a dedication for him, and that's,
right.
that's playing into the fundraising effort?
Correct.
Can you explain
correct.
A little more?
Yeah, so yeah, Congressman Matt McHugh was the early folks that was part of this sweeping legislation that would, begin the whole journey with the UDC and the protection of that upper part of the river valley there.
And what's next then? Are there some deadlines or decisions coming up that could, help with the funding situation, or what are we doing now? What are they doing now after these recommendations?
So UDC is a 501(c), and they have their own space. So they are funded through the end of the year. They're not currently dependent on additional appropriations and access to like NPS sites and personnel.
So National Park Service. Yeah.
But, from then on, you know, it's a conversation to be had, and hence why they had the task force. So, come out to the UDC meetings that they have throughout the month, if you want to stay informed.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. you've been keeping folks informed as a reporter on this story.
Yes. Yeah. So keep up with the River Reporter as well. You know, we print media is also, funding is a big theme this year.
Well, for everybody. And as we mentioned, it's not just the funding, but it's more about like voices and keeping those voices out there and alive and thriving. And that's why we talk to you guys at the River Reporter and all of our print partners so that we are able to amplify your voices and your stories that you're bringing to everybody. You're a new reporter here.
I am, and just getting with it. But yeah, it's very cool to be working at the local level. You know, even attending the plaque ceremony that they held, Ben Johnson, the Tustin supervisor, he was there as a state trooper back in the day in 1978 when they were, protesting around the upper Delaware mm-hmm. and what was going to happen. So mm-hmm. very cool stuff.
And where were you before you came to this area?
So I... coming from North Carolina, uh-huh. So I do actually have like some radio experience. So this is fun to kind of be back in the studio.
Where did you work in North Carolina radio?
This was
radio?
Like years ago, like college radio.
Oh yeah, level. Well, it all comes back to you. It's like riding a bike. Ronald knows. And so tell us a little bit about how it's been for you so far. You've just a couple months into the assignment here. How are you finding it?
I'm loving it. I think it's gorgeous out here. So you know, hence why we should protect. You know,
I was just going to ask you about that. Like you're new to the area, but mm-hmm. you're seeing this community involvement in this particular resource that's so vital to the area. What do you think that means about the community values that you're seeing and the stewardship of the Delaware River?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the emphasis that they had there, bringing the community together to pull, you know, resources and funding. You know, one of the members was actually doing like the physical labor of putting the plaque up there, pro bono. So yeah, it's just like kind of bringing the community together always, but in times of need as well.
Right. What are you working on next?
Tune in. I've been doing a lot of coverage on food insecurity in Sullivan County. Mm-hmm. I go to the board meetings, you know, for Sullivan County and Tustin. So I'm just trying to, you know, soak up all the information and do the role justice.
Well, that's great. Carla Guzman is the new reporter at the River Reporter, and you can follow her reporting and the whole team at the riverreporter.com or find it on the newsstands. And we'll have you back. It's great to have you.
Shout
in
out to Liam for trusting me to just come up here and chat with y'all. But hopefully this won't be the last.
Yeah, no, we'll have you back if Liam will allow it again.
Yes. I'm sure. Shout out to my editor, Liam.
Thank you, Carla. All right, again, it's our fall fund drive, and we are looking for your support at 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. Make your donation now. Help support independent media like ours and the River Reporter and all of our friends out there who are doing reporting in this area. Keep it going so that we can amplify those voices right here. 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. We'll take a quick break and back with more Radio Chatskill.
When I sit down for an interview, I'm thinking about you. I'm Mary Louise Kelly from NPR. Not every day, but on the best ones, journalists get to ask people in power questions and hold them to account. There is a reason that freedom of the press is enshrined in the Constitution. At home and abroad, leaders make choices that affect your life. Their impulses and decisions need to be examined in as thoughtful and rigorous an interview as possible. Now, journalists don't do this work to score political points. We do it in the service of asking tough questions on your behalf so you and the world can hear the answers, or lack thereof. That is both a privilege and a responsibility. When you donate to this NPR station, you support journalism that does not back down. Here is how to give and how to help public radio hold powerful people to account.
Donate now at wjffradio.org. Thank you.
You can call us at 845-482-4141 as well, 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. We are looking for your support because the challenge continues in terms of funding. That federal funding was pulled. And we have heard from so many people in the community, and we're very grateful, but that challenge continues. We need to keep going because every dollar counts, and every dollar is really kind of a statement. It will show that we won't be silenced, right? We are the ones that are going to be here on the front lines for you, and your support is more important than ever. Every donation keeps us on the air, keeps us strong, independent, and free, serving our community first. So donate and keep us connected at 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. If you've given already, thank you for standing with Radio Catskill, because together we're not just making radio, we're making a difference. We're making this service available to everyone. It's the public in public radio and public media. Our goal is $55,000 for our fall fund drive. We're at 21% of that, and we want to thank so many people who have donated. Marlene, we heard from Susan. We heard from Barry, Mark. We heard from Jonathan and Pat. Also, Jonathan, Cindy. Cindy saying online, we appreciate all that you're doing to keep Radio Catskill alive. Hope this helps to bring back more music, less talk. We really miss the jazz programs if they're eliminated. They won't be. We've still got jazz here. Keith and Cindy, thank you so much. Patricia saying, where would we be in Sullivan County without WJFF? We would lose our feeling of a community and of local news events. And that's exactly right. We are keeping everybody connected in this community by talking to different folks from all around. We've got some more coming up in a little bit with some other interviews lined up, and also science stories from Joe Johnson. We'll take a quick break and come back with more. You're listening to Radio Catskill.
I'm Brooke Gladstone from On the Media. And as you can deduce from the name of the show, we track the evolving media, the right and the wrong of it, across myriad platforms. But the truth is, the best thing about it, and I'm talking here about the fact-based media, the independent media, is that it's here at all. Over the 3 decades I've been watching, there have been countless bombardments and forays and brawls, but I've never seen it attacked with such focus and ferocity as now. Especially our own little corner of it, public media. Your media, we hope. You know, you could stand up for public media right here at home. Start a monthly gift or add to your existing one. Here's how you do it.
Give now at WJFFradio.org. Protect public media and stand with Radio Catskill. WJFFradio.org. Thank you so much.
Or call us at 845-482-4141. Tim Bruno here for Radio Catskill, joined by Ronald here to help us with the fall fund drive. Ronald, we've been seeing some progress here, looking for folks to call 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org.
Yes, the Wheel of Progress, if you go on our website, wjffradio.org, you can see that Wheel of Progress, and you can know how far we are along. And last we checked, I believe we were at 18%, but now we are at, drumroll please,
21%. Yes, that was this morning when we were on, but we've gotten some great folks so far contributing. I listed a few of them there, 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. Call us and show your support with your donation for our fall fund drive. One of the great things that we're able to bring you are some coverage from not just reporters who are here with the River Reporter in an official capacity, but some of our volunteers who like to tell their stories based on their interests. And one of those is our resident science guy, Joe Johnson. Joe, you may know from hosting All Things Considered on Mondays from 4 to 6, but Joe is a retired science teacher and has a particular interest in all of that world. A world that I don't necessarily always connect very well with because of my brain. But Joe is here to tell us more about stuff, and he's got science stories for us this week, including a bird-brained discovery. It's actually something really cool with the bearded vulture and their nest artifacts. Some cool things they found in their nests from like millions of years ago. Incestuous chemistry, which is related to some space stuff, and the recent Nobel Prizes in science. Here's Joe. Let's start off by talking about the Nobel Prizes in science.
Yeah, last week was Nobel Week, and they award 3 prizes in science. I know they do literature and economics and the Peace Prize, too, but I'm a little more interested in the science. So the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences gave out the 3 Nobel Prizes last week, physiology and medicine, physics and chemistry. Now, in physiology and medicine, there were 3 scientists. It's funny that in all 3 of these categories, there's 3 scientists that won all of them. But Mary Brunkow, Fred Ramsdell, and Shimon Sakaguchi, they figured out how the immune system is regulated. In other words, what keeps it from attacking our own healthy cells. They identified what they called this, what the committee calls the security guards of the immune system, which are regulatory T cells that can actually stop the immune system from attacking normal cells. Now, this opens up a whole new field of research. There's a lot of implications for cancer treatment and autoimmune diseases like lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, and multiple sclerosis, and a whole bunch of others. So this is big news. This is pretty cool stuff.
It was impressive to me to see the number of U.S. scientists included in these awards.
Yes.
That the field of science and research still healthy and going strong in the United States.
And let's hope it keeps on that way. Now, in physics, three scientists, John Clark, Michael DeVray, and John Martinez, they characterized the phenomenon of what is called macroscopic quantum tunneling in supercooled superconductors. This is some heavy, heavy-duty physics. Okay. So quantum tunneling is a phenomenon where electrons, you know, electricity is a flow of electrons, that the electrons can actually pass through thin insulators. Because there's a probability of them occurring in a zone, if you move that zone up to the insulator, there's a probability that they will just magically appear on the other side of the insulator. That's the quantum tunneling. Now, it was previously thought that this only happened at a really small scale, but these scientists proved that it can happen at a scale that makes it useful in electronics. And this has actually directly led to quantum computing. And so this is pretty deep stuff. I've been reading up on it and trying to wrap my brain around it. It's pretty interesting stuff.
It's above my pay grade.
Mine too. Now in chemistry, once again, three scientists, Richard Robinson, Susumu Kitagawa, and Omar Yagi, they won the prize for the invention and application of metal organic frameworks called MOFs. These are metal ions linked together in a 3D framework by organic, which means carbon-based compounds. This framework has a lot of spaces in it. In other words, pores that vastly increase the surface area of the material. They figure that 2 grams of one of these MOFs has the same amount of surface area as a football field. And that makes them really useful. They can use different metal ions and different organic compounds to create these frameworks. They're these three-dimensional frameworks. Think of almost like a crystal lattice that have really different properties and capabilities with different pore shapes and sizes. They can be configured to capture and release specific materials. And they look like they're going to be really useful in a bunch of areas. Carbon capture, because they can configure them that they will actually capture carbon dioxide. Drug delivery, they can actually release the needed drugs exactly where and when they need them there. Environmental remediation, cleaning up the environment, and electronics industry. The cool thing is they're self-assembling. You don't have to make them. Just put the materials together and they assemble themselves, and they're really predictable. Mm. And just three really, really cool things happening. Now, do you know the Nobel story? Why Nobel? You know what Alfred Nobel is most famous for?
Wasn't he an inventor of dynamite?
He did. He invented TNT, trinitrotoluene. And he woke up, and it made him a lot of money. And he woke up one morning, and he read his own obituary. His brother had passed away, and somehow they had got it wrong. And one French newspaper said, "The merchant of death is dead." Because the TNT had been used in a lot of munitions and killed a lot of people. So he thought to himself, I want my memory to be more than just the merchant of death. So he took his vast fortune and he started the Nobel Prizes.
An amazing contribution to our society, and also amazing contributions from all of these winners, just a few in the science area that we mentioned.
Yeah, very true.
What else do you have in terms of chemistry here? This is Enceladus?
Enceladus, yes. Now, Enceladus, this was the October 1st issue of Nature Astronomy. Enceladus is the sixth largest of Saturn's 274 known moons. It's got some big ones, but it's got a lot of tiny ones, too. Enceladus is about 300 miles in diameter, and scientists believe that it has a rocky core that's surrounded by a salty ocean with an outer shell of ice. I know you are very interested in outer space, yeah. You know, in life off Earth. Yeah. And so that's why I want to talk about
this. Did we
find it yet? Well, not yet. Not yet. Now, the elliptical orbit, the Enceladus orbits in an elliptical orbit, which means it goes closer to Saturn and farther away. And this causes a stretching and compressing effect of the moon, which is called a tidal force. And it actually heats up the interior of Enceladus. The stretching and heating causes fractures of the surface and geysers of the ocean water to erupt from the surface and shoot out into space. This actually contributes to the rings of Saturn. It's one of the reasons why Saturn has rings. Now, the Cassini probe, which was launched in 1997 by NASA and the European Space Agency and the Italian Space Agency, it arrived in 2004 and orbited Saturn for 13 years and studied a lot of different things before it was intentionally crashed into Saturn, which incinerated it and kept it from infecting any of the moons. You know, if there was any organisms from Earth, they didn't want them to infect one of the moons. And they sampled the E ring. That's the part of the ring where Enceladus orbits. And they found a whole host of compounds, methane, ammonia, carbon monoxide, nitrogen, carbon dioxide, hydrogen cyanide, acetylene, propylene, ethane, just a whole bunch of stuff. But they didn't have proof that it actually came from Enceladus. So in 2015, they actually flew it close to Enceladus, about 30 miles away, and through one of these plumes that was erupting from the South Pole. And so they got a direct sample of very freshly ejected material. And they have found, it's taken this long to actually analyze the data. There are petabytes of data that were sent back from Cassini, just a tremendous amount of data. But they said that the plume contained a lot of complex organic compounds, functional groups with oxygen, ring structures of carbon atoms, which are called aromatic compounds, chain hydrocarbons, esters, ethers, phosphates, nitrogen and oxygen-bearing compounds. Basically life soup. There's, you know, they think that there's, you know, the core is this hot rocky core, probably hydrothermal venting into the ocean, which is where we think life may have started on Earth. And so, yeah, this is some pretty interesting stuff. So not direct evidence of life, but boy, a lot of the ingredients are there.
Life friendly,
yes.
All right, let's talk about your other story here. An ancient artifacts in Spain?
Yes, bearded vultures. Okay, so there are these birds called the bearded vulture. This was, by the way, was the September 11th issue of the journal Ecology. They're native to Southern Europe, East Africa, India, and China. These really big birds. They have about a 9-foot wingspan, some of them. And they nest in these cliffside caves that have been used by multiple generations of vultures. All right, once one generation, another generation takes over. So they've been nested in for hundreds and hundreds of years. Now they feed almost exclusively on bones that they fly them up in the air and drop them on rocks and then feed on the broken bones. Now over the last two centuries, their numbers have really drastically decreased. They basically got a bad rap. They were suspected of killing livestock and even taking children. And so people started shooting them and leaving out poison bait. There was a lot of habitat loss. So the numbers have really, really decreased. And now currently they're extinct in parts of the south of Spain for over 100 years. And so in 2008 and 2014, members of the Spanish Wildlife Service actually excavated 12 of these nests. They had to rappel down the side of a mountain to get to these nests. And they use archaeological techniques. And they went through them layer by layer, and they found a lot of what you might expect, branches and vegetation, which, you know, told them what kind of plants were living in the area at the time, bones and bone fragment, hooves from hooved animals, which tells us what their diet was, and eggshell fragments, which tells us about their breeding success. And actually, they can look at them and see what kind of toxicology they had going on, what pesticides they may have been exposed to, because it would be preserved in the eggshells. But surprisingly, almost 10%, about 200 different objects of what they found was of human origin, built into the nest. Now, there's modern examples of this. You know, I've seen bird nests that have string and pieces of plastic in them that the birds have used to build their nests. Ravens are known to collect shiny objects like keys and beads and bits of foil and stuff like that. But in these nests, they found a whole bunch of very cool stuff. 72 scraps of leather, including one piece of sheepskin that was over 600 years old that had been marked with red ochre lines. Wow. Now that's a long time ago. 129 pieces of woven cloth. They found a medieval crossbow bolt with an iron tip. you know, these birds must be, you know, they're scavengers. They're using this stuff to build their nests. They found a slingshot and a lot of stuff made from grass. There's a species of grass called esparto grass, which is this, I looked it up. It's this really tough grass that people have made stuff out of, like baskets and stuff for a long time. And they actually found a bit of a basket and a whole sandal. They found a shoe from 650, they radiocarbon dated it at 650 years ago.
Amazing. They've got their like own little natural museums in their nest.
Yeah. It's like they're curating what's going on around them. They're looking at what's going on around them and using it. Now, radiocarbon dating showed that the items were between 150 and 675 years old. And here's the cool part. There's a lot more nests that they can go and look at. And I think they're going to be.
Really fascinating science, as always. Joe Johnson, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Always great to have Joe on with some science stories, opening our eyes into the world of science. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll hear from singer-songwriter Eli Lev. This is Radio Chatskill.
Coming up on WCNY's The Capitol Press Room, we'll speak with Assemblymember Jennifer Raj Kumar, a Queens Democrat who wants to get New York State into the business of producing its own pharmaceuticals. And we'll also explore the costly burden for counties of ensuring that New Yorkers with mental health conditions are competent to stand trial. All that and much more wherever you download, stream, or tune in to WCNY's The Capitol Press Room. This afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
I've talked to folks who were in graduate programs in New York who are like amazing, qualified computer programmers, quants even. And they say like, you know, I had like 400 interviews this semester. I can't even get an internship because it's all full of AI screens.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, host of On Point. If you want to better understand a future that's already here, please contribute now. Here's how.
Make your donation now at WJFFradio.org. Thanks.
It's our fall fund drive. We're looking for your help at 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org, where your trusted source for local news, your soundtrack for the drive home, and the place where our community comes together. The future's on the line, though. We need to ensure that we continue to be that trusted voice with your help. 845-482-4141 or go to WJFFradio.org and make a donation to help us meet our fall fund drive goal of $55,000. We're on our way. We could hear from you at 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and one of the great things about living here is all the great music we get to hear in the area, including folks who are coming through the area. Eli Lev, singer-songwriter and world traveler from Silver Spring, Maryland, is going to be performing at the Common Good in Ellenville on Thursday. I'm going to talk to him about his music and the stories behind his latest projects, Present Journey and Past Lives, but listen to a little of that. This is Eli Lev and Love in the Middle Ages.
In my early age, I heard them talk about true love, so I started looking for where it could be. I ran from kisses in the third grade, dated a girl in middle school for 10 days. I thought it would never come my way, but I found love in the middle ages.
It's Eli Lev, and Eli's joining us now live on the phone. Eli, thanks for being here.
Hi there, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, tell folks about yourself and your musical journey. How did this all begin for you?
Well, I'm actually a former middle school teacher, if you can believe that. I taught on the Navajo Nation in northern Arizona for a few years, and I picked up some pretty amazing culture and ideas and knowledge, one of which was the Four Directions. Fast forward 15 years later, I decided to follow my dreams and pursue music as a full-time occupation. And the Four Directions is actually the first project of my music project. So all my music project comes from my life experiences. And I'm a former teacher turned full-time touring musician now.
Tell us a little bit more about the Four Directions. What are those and how did that shape your musical style?
Yeah, so the Four Directions is a concept. A lot of indigenous communities have this concept of the Four Directions. The sun rises in the east, Then it goes to the South and the West and the North. Each kind of culture has different colors, different aspects, sacred mountains for each direction. And Navajos have a very strong kind of cosmology around this kind of worldview. And what it did is it gave me a lot of balance. It gave me a lot of sense of place in the world and in the community. And I wanted to share that feeling and that those insights through my music. So my first project is called Four Directions, and my first EP was All Roads East. My second EP was Way Out West. My third EP was Deep South. And my fourth EP is True North. So altogether, they create a 20-song project. And each EP came out about a year away from each other. And it really was an awesome guide for me as a new musician to kind of give me a story to follow. Mm-hmm.
And how was that decision to leave teaching to go full time into music for you? How did that work? Was it a difficult one, or was it something that just happened and transitioned naturally?
Yeah, it was interesting. I taught for almost a decade on the Navajo Nation. I taught in Australia. I taught in the Middle East. I taught in a small country called Andorra. And I just heard your segment about Spain. So Andorra was just next to Spain. Yeah. And so I came back to the U.S. and got my master's degree in education. And I was going to be a teacher's teacher and train other folks. And then I had almost, you could call it like a gap year. I'm from Silver Spring, Maryland. So I went back home and just connected with friends and family. And I started doing shows. And, you know, my first show was, you know, my parents came and two friends was in the corner of a coffee shop. And they were like, when's your next one? I was like, I don't know. So I kept booking shows, and then I was like, well, I should record some music. And the momentum just was so strong, and people just got such a big reaction from it. I was like, you know what? Let me just do this for a while and see if, you know, this can sustain me. And here I am 8 years later, Tim, and music has been the guiding force in my life ever since.
Yeah. And your latest EP is called Present Journey. What does that title mean to you, especially after your Four Directions project?
Well, after the Four Directions, I didn't really know where to go. Some people were like, oh, you should do north, northeast or south, southwest. I was like, I don't know. So I realized that the next logical kind of space for me to move into was Three Worlds. So right now I'm on my Three Worlds project. Present Journey is out now. And actually my new album Past Lives just came out last week, Tim. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And so Present Journey, Past Lives, and next year will be Future Myths. And those will be the three EPs of the Three Worlds project.
There's this sense of spirituality that influences, it seems, your music, especially, as you said, working with indigenous people. Your style has been compared to folks like the Lumineers, Abbott Brothers. How do you feel about comparisons like that? And what do you feel makes your sound unique?
Oh, I feel honored. Absolutely. They're incredible artists and some of my favorite. And there's a variety of styles in my music. So I'll incorporate the native flute. From the Navajo Nation, I'll incorporate harmonica, mandolin, piano, acoustic guitar. I'll incorporate different tunings as well, open tunings from the Middle East. I have some songs in Spanish. And essentially, they're a reflection of my life experiences. So I do like to think that I pull a variety of genres and artists, but there is that kind of spiritual kernel of uniqueness that I think the songs hold.
What's a memorable experience from your international journeys that's influenced your songs and songwriting?
Oh, man. So I was just touring in Europe, actually, in January. And then I went to the UK in February for a tour. And one memorable experience was when I toured in Austria. And it was this small skiing town, skiing resort town called Obertauern. And I was like the weird American that came to town. And I printed these, I print like tour posters up for shows and I send them, you know, in digital format. Turns out the hotel that I was playing at knew all the bars, all the restaurants, all the ski shops, and the poster was literally plastered around the entire town. So everybody knew I was coming, and I had two or three dates at this hotel called the Lazy Flamingo. And it was this American-themed hotel as well. So here's the American coming in this American-themed hotel in this small Austrian ski town where everybody sees my face. And it was just, it was a wild time.
Yeah.
I played originals and covers and, you know, singing along to all their favorite songs. And it was just a really kind of, you know, quasi-rock star moment on my European tour.
The folks in Ellenville better get it together. I hope that they're plastering your face all over as we speak. You're performing at the Common Good on Thursday. We should note that the Common Good is owned by one of our board members, Matthew Goldman. What do you think that fans?
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, what do you think the fans can expect from your live performance there that maybe you know you don't get from the recordings?
Well, here's the interesting thing: Past Lives was recorded in Peekskill. So its spiritual home is actually in the Hudson Valley in New York area. So these new songs from Past Lives, essentially, they have the voices of my ancestors woven throughout the songs to give honor to them and to pay homage. So I'm actually figured out a way to play my ancestors' voices live during the show.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, having the songs being recorded kind of, you know, nearby in this space is also pretty special. So it's been 2 years since I recorded the song. It just takes that long for them to be released to the world.
Mm-hmm.
But it really is a celebration. I'll be able to share my songs from Present Journey, from Four Directions, and also from my new album, Past Lives.
And, you know, your music has had this description of offering, quote, everyday enlightenment. And we've talked a little bit about that in this conversation. How do you hope your music impacts the listeners who hear it? Is it that sense of the enlightenment and some of the things you're sharing there from your ancestors and past?
Yeah, I got this really fascinating text message the other day from one of my dear fans. And this is what they had to say about my music. They said, I've been listening to your music. It's provided the soundtrack of this morning. There are so many levels in these songs, and even I get to discover more and more as I listen. They are wonderful. It feels like the lyrics give the mind great candy to connect, while the harmonies and resonance of the arrangements are working magic on the heart and soul. Mm. And I never thought about it like that. Mm. And I think that's a really cool description. The lyrics are accessible. And the songs are lyric forward, so it's about stories. But in the background, there are melodies and chord changes and sounds that really kind of open up the heart and the soul and the experience to really have a full-on experience with the music.
You know, you mentioned that you had moved from being a middle school teacher to full-time musician. What advice would you give to someone trying to follow their own creative path? What's your advice to some of those middle school teachers out there?
I love that question, right? You know, as teachers, we're always telling folks to follow their dreams. And there's no reason why we can't also do that, you know, take our own advice. And some of my students now are my biggest fans. They're like, go, Mr. Lev, you know? So I think creativity can look like a lot of things. I don't think it necessarily has to look like a full-time pursuit, like an occupation or a profession either. But I do feel like there is a place for creativity in all of our lives, whether that's writing or journaling or sketching or painting or, you know, pottery or music, whatever it is. I do feel like it enriches us and kind of allows us to explore our whole being. So, you know, it just happens that music for me was, I was able to make a living off of it, but I also, you know, it's not the only thing. And I do think creativity can support us in our lives, but we also shouldn't feel bad, you know what I mean? Or necessarily like we have to like do the whole thing with it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. Touch on parts of it or all of it. It just depends on you, I guess, right? Singer-songwriter Eli Lev. He'll be at The Common Good in Ellenville Thursday. There's more information at thecommongoodny.com and more information about Eli and his music at eli-lev.com. Eli, thanks so much for joining us and for sharing your journey. And we want to share a little bit more of your music here. I've got We Need a Bigger Bus queued up. Anything we should know about this one?
I love it. Yes. This is the Nashville hit that never was. It could be one day. We'll see.
All right. Eli Lev, thank you so much.
Thank you, Tim.
I I've been cooped up in this Mini Cooper, singing to myself, going through drive-thru after drive-thru, looking for some help. I'll miss my family and my girl and my friends there by my side. If you feel the beat and you're feeling me, then come on, let's ride. We need a bigger bus to get our friends.
All right, that's Eli Lev joining us, and you can hear him at Comic Good on Thursday. We will take a quick break and get back with more Radio Chatskill. Comedian Matt Ruby will be in Narrowsburg. We'll hear from him next. This is Radio Chatskill.
I'm Larry Kaplow, and I'm one of the editors on the States team here at NPR. The States team is where we work with member station reporters in all 50 states around the country. They're in places like Helena and Richmond and Tallahassee. It's state governments where they pass the laws that really shape our lives and our country and our democracy, maybe even more than Congress and the White House. It's in the state capitals where health insurance programs for people on low incomes are run and administered. It's state governments that oversee the public school systems. They decide the laws on abortion rights. They decide the laws about guns and gun control. All of those things are really critical in people's everyday lives, and so they're important to NPR's network coverage. Your donation supports vital local journalism here and across the country. Please give to this station today, and thank you.
Donate now at WJFFradio.org.
You can also call us at 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. It's our fall fund drive, and we are needing your support. We're fully listener-supported now that they've yanked government funding, so call us, 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. It's Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Joining us now is New York City comedian Matt Ruby, known for his sharp, dark, and button-pushing humor. Yes, the comedy that makes you think and laugh. His latest stand-up special, Bolo, is streaming on YouTube, and he's bringing his signature mix of comedy to the Parlor in Narrowsburg this Saturday. Matt, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
I described it as sharp, dark, and funny. Were we dead on, or how do you describe your brand of comedy?
No, that sounds good. Yeah, I think funny is the most important part. And then, yeah, I'm probably appealing to people who like to think and try to embed some ideas in there. But, yeah, telling jokes all along the way, pushing those buttons, yeah.
It's a certainly good time for that. Your latest special, Bolo, has been getting some good buzz. Stand-up World called it, quote, raw, real, and ripping into life's absurdities. What inspired this one, and what do you think makes it different from your earlier work?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think I'm always going around looking for, what's happening in life that's BS or hypocritical or something that feels true that everyone knows but no one's talking about. So I think that's my general worldview when it comes to comedy and how I'm discovering material. On this special, you know, I'm definitely talking about politics and dating and relationships and love and freezing your eggs and being Jewish right now and just sort of getting into the cracks of life and society. And I think, you know, I'm always searching for what's funny. I just think I keep getting better. So I think this is my best special yet. So I'm proud of it. And, going to be doing a whole new hour at the Parlor that I think is even a step up from that. So, yeah, just sort of just going around looking for the truth that no one's talking about that you can tell people.
You're New York City based. You performed all over, featured on Comedy Central, NBC. What do you think has changed about stand up, especially post pandemic, when audiences, you know, maybe they want something different, or are they engaged in this sort of more button pushing, sort of thinking form of comedy?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's this misconception right now that things have been bad for comedy. With, you know, everyone's talking about like cancel culture and people, all the words you can't say, but like, I think that it might be bad if you're trying to be the funny guy at your office or if you have an HR department. Yeah. But I think at a comedy club, people are craving it. So I think comedy is booming right now in part because the people who actually go out to comedy shows want to hear wild stuff. They want to hear you say provocative things that, you know, obviously you got to make it funny and, you know, not just be, you know, giving some hate speech or something like that. But I think if you're able to, like, you know, have some jokes and say some edgy things that people are really craving it because it's hard to find elsewhere.
I mentioned comedy has been described as button pushing. That was actually a description from the New York Times. Do you ever worry about crossing lines, or is that where you think the best comedy happens?
Yeah, I think you've got to dance with the line a little bit. That's where, you know, the tension is, and laughter often comes from, like, tension and release. So I think, you know, you just got to navigate it skillfully. You know, it's like, I think that I've been doing comedy a long time, so I think part of what you get from that experience is, like, how to flirt with the line and not go over it. Or if you do go over it, I always think of, like, what George Carlin says, like, you can take people over the line, just make sure that they're happy they went there with you. So I think there's something about, like, yeah, you can be transgressive or push it a little bit or cross the line, but just make sure you're making it funny, that you believe whatever you're saying, and that when you're taking people with you there, make sure that they are happy about it afterwards, as opposed to feeling like you've done something wrong.
And, you know, there's so much going on in the world every day. There's some new headline. Do you tend to tweak as you go along with all the different things that are happening, or do you kind of keep a certain set in mind and kind of add just little bits?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm always paying attention to the news. If something topical comes up, I'll throw it into a set, or, you know, sometimes that kind of thing can do well on social media if you're trying to, you know, get some clips out there. But I think generally I skew towards trying to write, you know, what we call evergreen material. I like to have stuff that's going to be funny now and 2 years from now. And that kind of, you know, forces you to tap into some deeper, I think, resonant themes in life of things that are going to endure, as opposed to just like, hey, here's some news story about, like, Nicole Kidman's divorce, which is going to maybe get a laugh today, but, like, in a month, no one's going to care. So I think I'm trying to build an act that's more enduring and, you know, talk about deeper stuff that's still going to be resonant, you know, weeks or months or years from now, too.
That's Matt Ruby. He's going to be at the Parlor in Narrowsburg on Saturday. You can also catch his latest special, Bolo, on YouTube. Also follow him on Instagram and Substack to keep up with all the latest projects. And also the website is mattrubycomedy.com. Matt, thanks so much. Look forward to seeing you this weekend.
I appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time. Everyone support your public radio station. They need you, all right?
That's a great way to end it. Thank you so much. he's right. Listen to the man. It's our fall fund drive, and we do need your support at 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. We want to be able to bring you all of the great voices that you hear, not only on this show, but all of the shows and programs that we bring you, from local news to national news to international news, and all the great music and all of the great entertainment that we bring you as well. Every donation keeps Radio Catskill on the air, keeping us strong, independent, and free, serving our community first. So donate and keep us connected, keep us going. Your dollars keep our programming accessible, local, and fearless. Thank you for standing with us. 845-482-4141, wjffradio.org. Donate and help us. We want to end this fund drive sooner rather than later. So with your support, we can do it. 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support comes from Catskills Property Care, offering full property care year-round for commercial and residential properties in Sullivan County, including snow plowing, landscaping, property checkups, and more. Information at catskillspropertycare.com. And from the Calicoon Theater, an updated vintage movie theater with new film releases, live music, and more. CalicoonTheater.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hello, I'm Michelle Martin. How's the newspaper where you live? Thin? Getting thinner? Publishing a few days a week, if at all? You're not alone. Over the past couple decades, the U.S. has lost about a third of its newspapers, taking thousands of local journalists off their beats.
It will sell off more of its daily newspapers.
The largest news organization is shrinking.
It's laid off nearly a quarter of its newsroom.
And that makes it harder to keep up with our elected officials and what they're doing. A functioning democracy and functioning local journalism go hand in hand. We're trying to do our part, and that's why we need you to do your part by keeping NPR and the station strong with a donation today. And we thank you.
Your gift keeps local news, culture, and NPR funded and freely available to the entire community. Give what you can to keep it going. It's so important right now. Donate at wjffradio.org.
WJFFradio.org or call 845-482-4141. Neighbors have stepped up, and together we have been chipping away at that mountain of federal funding that was yanked. We were stripped of $170,000 that would have gone to us when Congress rescinded that funding. But thanks to folks who have stepped up, we are meeting our needs, and we still need to also meet the other goals that we had in place, like this fall fund drive. It's a $55,000 goal. Help us stay strong and free for everyone by donating now at 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. This is WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org, Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Mostly cloudy today with a high of 61. Tonight's low 48. Breezy with periods of sun tomorrow and a high 53. Cold tomorrow night and a low of 34. It's 11 o'clock.